Welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly.
And I'm Mike Filbert.
And this is Raise Your Average.
Exciting show today.
Yeah, we've got a great guest, Ivana Dilevska from Spear Advisors. Ivana is in the tech investing realm, but she specializes in industrial tech.
And her background is crazy, too. She was at Tiger Management, Millennium, Citadel, Deutsche Bank. Like her pedigree is exceptional. And her insights are fantastic. And I think very, very timely at the moment.
I feel like almost, you know, investors are missing out on something because she's got a really unique take on tech and, you know, where technology is in the overall cycle. And for a lot of investors, it's sort of an eye-opener because most investors think, you know, I own an index fund, I own an S&P 500 index, and all those technology companies are in there, all the really important ones. And I think they make the mistake of thinking, you know, that they're diversified in tech, but they really aren't.
Yeah, it seems to be one big crowded trade. And not only that, but the tectonic shifts that are happening under the surface, right, that you're alluding to, you think about the S curve of technology adoption, that like high speed curve meeting the J curve of actual production. And how do you actually get AI functioning? Well, it's not just about the software. It's not just about the mega caps. The mega caps are churning from massive cash flow generating businesses that didn't have a lot of CapEx to worry about and reinvest to now investing a massive amount of that cash flow. In 2026, her argument is that's where the real economy really starts to feel it, because these hyperscalers are on track to spend $600 billion this year, and that's up sharply from 2025, right? And so what are the downflow implications to some of the more, let's call them unsexy industrial players that we've been talking about forever, whether we've been on with Doonberg and other folks, and even myself? Like you've got this J curve of how do you get the industrial power gear and automation and electrification and chips to the places that they need to be in order to facilitate this story. And what's the opportunity there? And I think that's what Ivana points out so well, is she just goes through the value chain of where the economics are going to be realized. And, you know, some of it's large cap tech. And it'll be good to dig into that. Like, what of the large cap techs, who's the benefactor? Is it Google? Is it Amazon? And then,
yeah, and actually no one knows, right?
Correct. Well, and they're spending money like, because if they lose, they're bankrupt. The situation with Oracle is very interesting, right? You have this huge CapEx spend, this huge bet on OpenAI. I would say that stock looks like it's reflecting a lot of negative news or a lot of the new reality. And if anything were to surprise on the upside, the potential upside there is interesting. And so I wonder about that with Ivana, as well as all of her thesis on, you know, the industrial investment for the last 15 years has been nada, you know, with globalization and offshoring, factories have aged, digitization has lagged, CapEx hit lows, but now you've got AI turning that all on its head.
Yeah.
Factories need to be upgraded.
Going back to the last time we spoke to Ivana on the show, it was pre-ChatGPT. And we didn't even have an inkling of this. I mean, she was already there. She was already in this, you know, already in the realm of industrial technology. She already sort of recognized it as the part of the technology opportunity that investors were really not focused on. So again, going back to her career arc, like she really has this pedigree of having been in that space already and having done a lot of fundamental research on these companies beforehand. So she's got the upper hand in terms of the knowledge base.
Most people think of AI as just NVIDIA and hyperscalers, but Ivana has been arguing that it's a much bigger and longer opportunity with that industrial background or backbone that you point to that's been ignored, that has to be built out. And you complement that with the nearshoring aspect and bringing things friendshoring. and bringing things back from a geopolitical sense to a safe jurisdiction. It's really interesting, the dynamics at play in the tech stack. And the other thing that's so interesting is, as many people point out, and I think they forget the corollary. The first thing they point out is AI is going to make so many millionaires. It's going to make so much money. At the same time, it is going to disrupt the heck out of so many industries, something that we've just seen in SaaS, right? You've seen a 35% lop off in SaaS on the launch of Claude. So let's the nirvana is there, but make no mistake, there are going to be losers. Even just recently, Altruist comes out with a tax planning AI software and Schwab sells off 10%. Like, you're talking about these, I hearken back to, I remember when we were all owners of a BlackBerry and RIM, and Apple decided to enter that world and RIM got devastated and never came back. And everyone was like, I don't understand. I'll never give up my QWERTY keyboard. What's an app? Right. But the market knew. And I think that in the SaaS space, the market knows. There's definitely some that are more susceptible than others, more balance sheets that are a little bit more leveraged than others, and more business models that are less susceptible to disruption than others. But right now, as they say, when the whorehouse gets raided, even the piano player goes to jail. That's what we've got in SaaS world right now. So now it's about sorting out who's there, who's in the prison, and who actually is quite undervalued given the circumstances. So I think that the conversation is particularly timely, and Ivana's insights are going to be amazing.
This is Raise Your Average, dedicated to making you a better long-term investor. Join us as we sit down with some of the most interesting names in finance to discuss macro, markets, investment strategies, and more.
Well, Ivana, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Yeah, so thanks for the invite.
Pleasure. I mean, it's such a great time to have this conversation with you as well. There's definitely a lot of concern around concentration today. Investors are very largely invested in index funds. You know, a lot of investors think that they're diversified because they own what are today's
S&P, right? Yeah. the Nasdaq,
right? Yeah. They think that I already own everything. You know, what do I need to be, you know, looking at, you know, drilling down? To go along with that thought is the idea that investors have that it's fully valued. You know, if I'm just coming in now, maybe I missed the boat. And the reality is that that's just not true.
And yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we can get more into it. But basically, like, what we're seeing is that the impact is just broadening out so much that it's basically affecting the entire economy. So saying, hey, I don't want to be invested in AI, it kind of means like, where will you be invested, right? So whether you look at space and defense, whether you look at agriculture, whether you look at trucking, like all of those ultimately will be using AI, right? And or driving AI in the case of space. So I think it's basically like, the good news is that you have a lot more companies to choose from. It's not necessary that you just have to invest in the semiconductors. But the bad news is that you really need to know what you're doing, because each one of the companies, like, they can be a winner or a loser. So whether you're on the right side can really determine your returns.
Yeah, the profound shift I think that's occurring is, you know, you had these mega caps in the indexes that had massive cash flows and very little CapEx. And now you see the CapEx exploding, $600 billion this year, way above what was last year, probably going to be more next year. And so those companies are actually transforming. They're changing. And there's downstream effects that come from that, that you're so great at highlighting. And the opportunity, I think, for outperformance in positioning is exceptional. You know, in the past, you've had to compete with this index that's 40% of these large companies that are just on a roll. And it's hard to differentiate because everything else is not performing as well. And so there really isn't an option but to crowd. But now you have this sort of total changing of that environment. And so I'm really excited to dig into this. So, you know, how are you seeing that capital expenditure and that cycle trickle through the economy, as you say, and other parts and other sectors, and even within the technology space? How are you seeing that play out? Where are you seeing opportunities? And where are you seeing risks, most, even more importantly? Like, we've seen this SaaSageddon, Altruist launch. The Altruist yesterday launches an AI tool to do taxes, and Schwab goes down 10%.
Yeah, exactly. Insane. Those are the types of impacts that you see, right? Where it's not necessarily NVIDIA is going up and down. You have these companies that are in very tangential areas like financials or industrials that are really moving based on the impact of these announcements.
So where do you think, when you, Ivana, when you look at how most investors get tech exposure today, what do you think they misunderstand about what they actually own?
So I think the biggest thing that people misunderstand is that they believe that they're owning a very broad-based exposure to AI. But if you dive deeper into what these passive indices own, it's really only the mega caps, because they're market cap weighted. You really get exposure to the hyperscalers, to Meta, to Tesla. Those are really the names that you own. I think that's the biggest misunderstanding today. So I think that worked for the past several years. It worked definitely in the past tech cycle, but we are now starting to see a lot more differentiation between, even within the hyperscalers, but even more broadly, a lot more opportunities get created as a result of where these hyperscalers are plowing their capital into. That's really where a lot of the opportunities are. So I think the misunderstanding is more like, hey, I'm pretty good, I'm pretty set, I want diversified exposure, but you're really not getting neither diversified nor high quality exposure through owning the passive indices.
That CapEx spend, they're going from, as I said, cash flow to CapEx spend. So where is it going? What are the impacts that you're seeing in?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically what's been happening is not only that these companies are investing insane amounts of dollars, but they really have no option but to invest, because if you're not investing, you're going to miss the boat. So that's really usually not where you're going to see the best returns. The best returns you see where the spending is actually going. And then if you look at where is it going, a lot of it is still concentrated in the chip space. So if you look at on in a dollar basis, NVIDIA will still get the bulk of that, the CapEx dollars. But in percentage basis, there are a lot of interesting areas that are driving the improvement. So these areas would be networking, like optical components, memory. And now we're going even one step further into the value chain, and it's the companies that provide the machines to make these components. So we're really seeing a pretty broad exposure. The semicap equipment names, those are a new area for us that we've been focused on. That cycle started in the middle of last year. So it's relatively in the early innings compared to the semi cycle. It's now in year 3+. So I think there are a lot of these areas that are just starting to work, and that's where we're seeing a lot of the upside.
How different is this this AI CapEx cycle from past tech cycles in terms of duration and visibility?
So it's very different in that the dollar amounts are just nothing like we've seen before. And because they're so large, the basic infrastructure is just not equipped to deal with such large investment. So you're seeing a lot more visibility into the future. So usually a cycle would be 3 to 5 years. We are now having visibility into 10 years out if you look at the investments. It's not going to be all up in a straight line, right? You do see mini cycles based on what products are companies introducing, what's the new chip, what's the new AI model. So you will see mini cycles within that long-term 10-year trend, but companies have visibility just because you need to secure land, power, for these projects 3 to 5 years out. And then we have visibility on demand, even extending beyond that. So I think the main difference here is that because the dollar amounts are so big, first, the size of the impact is larger, but also the durability, just because physically you can't secure everything today, even if you had the money to spend.
So who writes the checks first when AI scales, and who gets paid last?
So the first people that get paid is definitely the hardware layer. That's already been kind of out there and known. So companies like NVIDIA, AMD, they're at the core providing the chips. Now we're getting into actual large scale buildouts. So it's the opportunity is expanding to who provides the power generation, who provides the actual site. I think that's where we're finding a lot of opportunities today. We're seeing a lot of opportunities on the how do you connect these things. So that would be networking, optical components. So that's really where a lot of the near term, let's say in the 3 to 5 years, dollars are going to be going. And then I mentioned semi-cap equipment. That's another area where like you see have clear visibility 2 to 3 years out. Like the companies are saying, even if they there's basically supply constraints, so they're not able to meet all of the orders this and next year. So the visibility they have, it's unlike anything they've had in their careers. So that's the base kind of opportunity where the CapEx dollars are going, and that's the best risk reward that we're seeing today. Now, one step further than that becomes a little more tricky because these are the new entrants that are building the applications. They're providing the models. They're providing the software infrastructure. Here, it's a little bit more tricky because every new announcement is a pretty big change and pretty big. It has pretty big impact on the rest of the company. So you really want to make sure you're either diversified or you're picking the right companies there, because every new model that gets introduced is better than the prior one, or every new integration, software integration company that gets introduced, it's competing with the existing one. So this is an area that we're spending a lot of time. We are finding a lot of opportunities, but it's definitely not as much of a no-brainer where like the dollars are coming here and you whatever you buy, you will make money. And then the third one is the software applications. I think that part is really coming under significant attack. The reason why this is happening is that the companies really didn't stay ahead of the curve in terms of investments. So if you look at the AI tools that they're providing within their applications, they're really not meeting customers' demands, versus companies that are starting from scratch using AI tools can build something much better in a matter of months, right? So that's really been the major shift. We were able to get ahead of that because we are in the weeds and we can kind of model out when Salesforce introduces an AI agent, hey, like how much will that actually be in terms of dollars? But that's really been key for investors to really evaluate and make sure they know what they're getting themselves into, because a lot of these were considered to be the big winners, right? And they're not really it's not really working out that way.
Yeah, it the pace of change and the launches are just so incredible, and stocks being, you know, forward discounting mechanisms, having to discount a future that is just constantly dynamic and in flux, is why you're seeing these price movements. So, you know, I don't think SaaS is going away, but its growth rate's probably reducing, and thus you have to have an adjustment in the valuation and positioning, and it's happening so quickly. It's kind of mind-blowing and coming from left field. So you're in the thesis that you're on with the industrial tech side, is it more certain what the implications are of the technology and more beneficial for them, and you're seeing value in that area? Is that what I'm sort of hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think basically if you look at B2B technology, the benefit of this over consumer is that you have a lot more visibility and a lot better way to do research, right? So you can talk to these companies, you can see where the CapEx dollars are going. It's really not a consumer application where like either everybody likes it or nobody likes it overnight. So when we underwrite our investments, we really have pretty good visibility in terms of what's going to get adopted, where are we in each cycle. So that's really why we've chosen this as a focus area. So if you understand the value chain and if you understand prior cycles, it is actually very easy to identify opportunities way ahead of when you hear about them in the news.
Is there a mental model that you could share, just thinking through that stack, that you could share with folks that you use in at Spear and whatnot? Is there something that can help folks navigate this and give them a framework?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a pretty defined process. We basically cover about 120 companies. It changes plus or minus based on new companies coming to market, but the coverage list is pretty set. And then we talk to these companies on an ongoing basis to assess where they're investing their dollars and what they're seeing in their respective markets. So from there, we identify focus areas. And this is really where a lot of the alpha comes in. Will come from the focus areas and the specific companies we select, right? So just saying like, oh, AI is the future, that's really not going to generate returns for you. Or saying, oh, autonomous vehicles are going to be on the roads by 2045, right? Right. That's not necessarily an investment thesis, in our opinion. So what we do is try to find focus areas that have very clearly laid out thesis. And then from those, we select 2 to 3 companies that are leaders or best ways to get leverage to that thesis. So that's really where we are generating a lot of the alpha. And for us, the key is to have very clearly laid out expectations for what we believe should be happening. If the company is delivering or out-delivering on those expectations, it will continue to be something that we're invested in. If it's not, we have a bench of ideas that are ready to go. So this idea velocity is something that I think it's important for people to do. Sometimes people get stuck in ideas. So an example is the software trade, because now you're like, oh, well, now it's down 50%. Well, now it's down 60%. Well, you know, if something is down 50%, it can still be down another 50. So I think it's very important for people to have an investment process that's repeatable and that they can use. That's at least what we do.
Yeah. And Ivana, what kind of ideas, like what kind of focus areas light you up?
So right now, for example, we believe that networking is a big opportunity. So we're very focused here on finding the best networking place. We really like the optical networking guys. The semicap equipment is another focus area that's like we saw the cycle inflecting last year. Companies are going to have to start spending on building additional capacity and expanding their green light their brownfield capacity. So that's another focus area. Space is another area that we just started getting interested last year in. Not only about the data center opportunity, which we think is going to be a huge catalyst, but there's also a pretty good risk reward from the defense spending side. So you have that as a basis. And then if data centers in space materialize, which we think they will, you're going to have an upside to that. So that's another focus area for us. So those would be like the types of areas that we go then and search further into. Okay, well, what are the companies that we like that check all of our expectations? Like, is the management decent? Are we seeing upside? A lot of it, like if you're not going to see upside in earnings, you're probably not going to make money. So that's really like you have the theory behind it, but at the end of the day, you need to figure out how is this going to translate into earnings coming ahead of expectations. So that's usually how you make money. So I think that's a little bit about where we're focused on today. But the key is really to find specific opportunities.
Yeah.
One of the areas that you found that's been an opportunity as well is this industrial tech sector due to its underinvestment for years. And so what opportunities has that left behind for you that you guys are seeing right now?
Well, we're seeing so everything that we cover falls within industrial technology, right? So the way we look at the 120 companies in our coverage universe is that at each given time, the value goes in different places. So right now, the value is in building this infrastructure out, right? And then the value will further shift as we get further into the cycle into, hey, who is benefiting from that? So that's when we're going to be finding the beneficiaries. Right now, as you can see in the market, everything that gets announced, one person benefits, three get hurt, right? So really, we're still kind of in the trial and research stage, but that's really how we're thinking about this, that over the next 10 years, our focus right now is on where the CapEx dollars going. And then as we get further, the hardware layer will get a lot more commoditized, and you will eventually build out enough capacity to service AI. And that's where the value will shift more to who has figured out how to use AI to generate returns. We are seeing early signs of it. A lot of the value that AI is providing today is actually accruing to the customers. So that's one interesting thing, both on the consumer, we're more focused on the industrial tech side, but both on the consumer and the industrial tech side, a lot of these tools are now basically free, and the value is accruing to the customers or the consumers, and the companies are not capturing a lot of it, right? But as we get further, the companies will kind of find their way to get a share of the pie. And I think that's going to be where you'll see a lot more investments in this application layer.
And that's just it, right, Ivana? I mean, so much of this focus has been on consumer spending. And, you know, we sign up for ChatGPT for $20 a month or a couple hundred bucks a month for the agentic model. These are all like $20 a month, right? That's sort of the low-hanging fruit of consumer usage. But why do industrial buyers, I mean, industrial buyers coming in are going to have a much bigger ticket, but why are they moving more slowly, and why is that actually a feature rather than a bug for investors?
So Pierre, I think you're spot on. Basically, the way it works is the consumer side, you introduce something and you either get a broad adoption or nobody wants it. And then the next thing that gets introduced, you're really like competing with the prior tool. In B2B technology, it takes the companies a lot more time to adopt a solution. But once they adopt it, they're really sticking with that platform. So they first vet it. They need to make sure that it's compliant, that it meets cybersecurity standards. But then once they're on the platform, it does take a long time for them to deploy something different. So this is why we like B2B technology, because you can actually like research, talk to companies, and even see like when things are changing. Like right now, we can see that companies are reevaluating a lot of these legacy software tools. It didn't come as a surprise to us, versus I feel like if somebody introduces something different than ChatGPT and everybody flocks to it, it would come as a surprise on the consumer side. So I think this visibility really helps you manage risk better, right? So once something gets adopted, you really have several years of upside. And then the other thing that I would mention is that we think that the B2B or the industrial technology opportunity is going to be significantly larger than the consumer. And even companies that were originally designed as consumer-centric, like OpenAI with ChatGPT, right now they're seeing much higher growth from their APIs from enterprises. And I think this is really where you're seeing that inflection happen where, okay, the consumer market is big, it's really fast adopting, but once the B2B technology wave gets rolling, it's going to be significantly bigger and much more durable growth than the consumer side.
It reminds me of, it reminds me of companies like Salesforce, you know, where Salesforce takes, you know, has a very long runway of adoption, takes a long time for companies to integrate, you know, a software platform like that in order to run their sales and service operations, their databases. But once they have it, it becomes so woven into the fabric of the company that it's very hard to abandon it if something better comes along. So that, I think that kind of, yeah, that kind of speaks to what, you know, what you were saying about how it may take more time to get the industrial buyers on board, but once they're on board, they're very sticky.
Absolutely, Pierre. And one thing I would add to that is Salesforce is a software example, and software is relatively easier to replace. Think about like all of these physical, like the chip manufacturing, right? Like you're not going to get another TSMC. You're not going to get another ASML. Like those are the companies that are making the technology. So yeah, sure, some other technology may come about and may require different manufacturing, but you're looking at a 10-year process to build dead out versus what's here today. So I would say you're spot on. And I would add to that that the physical part on top of software is even harder to replace. And that's really why like the cycles are pretty predictable. Like, you know, more or less based on prior cycles, how long they last, and you can actually analyze how much investment is going in, how, like, what does that actually mean? How long does that take?
Ivana, how do themes like automation, digital twins, electrification, and AI infrastructure intersect in your research?
So we think all of those areas are very interesting. Electrification is one that has a really near-term benefits, just because we're doing so much of this data center built out. So we're seeing a lot of opportunities on the power side, whether it's on data centers in space or it's power generation behind the meter. I think there is a lot going on in that space. Automation is a little bit trickier because we are going through this technological shift. So now a lot of the companies that used to provide the traditional automation that we would know of, they need to adapt their businesses to build something different, right? So it's not as clear cut. And even though, like, from a high level perspective, it sounds like, oh, like, I want to invest in robotics. Here, this company does robotics. It's not as simple as that, because those businesses can be disrupted. So we are spending a lot of time understanding how are they going to adapt for the next wave of investment. And a lot of people are excited about robotics. That's another thing that it's a very interesting opportunity, an area to focus on. But we think it's going to be much further out than a lot of people expect, mainly because it requires physical build out, right? So we think the first wave of even like if you look at these AI agents, they're taking longer than expected to come to market, and they literally sit on your computer. Like, they don't require any manufacturing. I think once you require manufacturing, that's going to take even longer to come to fruition. So I think it's important for people to spend a lot of time in that and understand what the different components are, but the risk reward is not there yet, especially if you consider the opportunity cost, right, that you're investing in. So like, that's really like, opportunity cost is a big component for us.
It's interesting. I always think of that through the lens of there's an S curve of technology adoption that then meets the J curve of the production realities in the physical world. And we're seeing those things smash together now in a lot of cases across the world of technology. Like, it's not like it scales like software. When you get the physical world involved and production systems and production lineups set up and things like that, that takes time.
Yeah, absolutely.
If AI bifurcates, I think we're going to have, as we've talked about, there's going to be winners and losers. And what does that mean from the perspective of the passive exposure that people have? And also, what does it mean from the opportunity set outside the passive exposure? Like, is this an opportunity for excellent stock picking, alpha outperformance? How does this all come together as AI kind of permeates everything?
Yeah. So, I mean, by definition, once you start seeing dispersion, that's where real alpha gets generated. So we're very excited about the opportunity set, just because that's kind of at the core of what we do. I believe you're spot on, like with the passive exposure. I think it's still going to deliver relatively okay returns. I don't think you're going to lose money in the mega caps over the next 10 years. But I think if you're looking for outsized beneficiaries or more targeted exposure, I think you really need to get into the weeds and understand what each company does and where they're positioned in their respective cycle. From our perspective, even with volatility, we're seeing a lot better risk rewards across the board and a lot more differentiated ideas once these dispersions start happening.
All right, so lots of opportunities. Where are you seeing the biggest dispersion risks and opportunities in the AI ecosystem at the moment?
So the biggest dispersion is happening between which model and infrastructure is going to win. So that's one area I would say, like last year you started seeing like OpenAI was the clear winner. And then as the year progressed, people started questioning, and then Google came with their model and TPUs. So there is definitely a wide dispersion there of who is benefiting. I think this is why we like the hardware components, because an optical supplier will supply to Google, but they also will supply to NVIDIA. So no matter who wins, they're going to have content on that spending. So that's one area. The other area where we're seeing a very big dispersion is in the software space. So what's been happening is, as these new models get introduced, people are realizing, oh my God, this Claude you can use and basically run applications like Microsoft much more efficiently. You don't, Microsoft should have been the one that had this embedded, but now another company is basically eating their lunch. And similar with other software applications, you're really able to replicate them, and people are really 100% on this, trying to come up with new tools. I think in this sell-off, basically everything software related is getting thrown off, but areas like cybersecurity, they're not getting replaced. Areas like software infrastructure, basically that connects and enables these builders or newer entrants to build applications, those are doing pretty well. So I think it's going to be very important, again, in this dispersion, to pick the winners and the better risk rewards. Like one area would be cybersecurity and this infrastructure, and avoid the applications unless you have something very specific about some application that you know they're introducing and they're going to benefit.
I think earlier you also covered your mental model of how you guys actually walk through the process of doing that as well. So I would encourage listeners to go back to that. As a differentiated mental model, how you guys process thoughts through and allocations and things like that, and ideas through the system at Spear.
Looking at the dispersion risks that you just talked about, I think there's, you know, the key for investors to realize is that it's still very early on in the corporate adoption space. It might be in the growth part, very well in the growth part of the J curve for consumer adoption, but for corporate adoption, we're still very much at the bottom of the curve. And so I just wanted to point that out, which was that's the feature. The feature is that this industrial segment or corporate segment of AI spending that we're talking about is actually still relatively new. And because companies are taking longer to adopt it versus their consumer counterparts.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Pierre. Like, even if you look at our coverage universe, only the very tech-savvy companies like NVIDIA have implemented themselves internally some of these tools. And that really started in the middle of last year. So we're now starting to hear more companies in the traditional space, like banks and financial institutions, start introducing some AI tools or even adapting them internally. It really is in very early innings. I think a lot of it needs to be vetted. A lot of it needs to be secured. So I think you're spot on that we are very early. Like, it's not even step one, I would say. It's really still in a trial stage. So I think once you see these AI agents become better quality, like we're seeing with Claude, I think the reason why they're so much better than the prior ones is because the new generation of Blackwell chips is significantly better than the prior generation. So the hardware is enabling better tools. And the Claude example was just one. I think there is more to come. So once you see this actually being able to do something useful for you, that's when you're going to see enterprises being like, okay, well, this is a no-brainer. I'm going to go through the steps of vetting this and securing it and spending all the money on it. And I think that's still to come.
Yeah. One of the funny things, and then we'll move on just very quickly, was that, you know, in the beginning, when it was all, you know, when it was mostly personal use, people were almost secretive about the fact that they were using it. Although, you know, we could see from the numbers that the adoption was very rapid. But what I've noticed just anecdotally is that in the last couple of years, companies and, you know, people in, even in the investment management space have started talking openly about their use of AI as opposed to, you know, it being something that you did in the background or quietly. Now the discretion about it is no longer there. People are actually talking far more freely about, oh yeah, I use Claude. OpenAI's ChatGPT. I use Gemini. We're using AI in every part of our work. But, you know, I think maybe even just a year ago, that wasn't, you weren't hearing that dialogue. And now you're starting to hear it more openly. And people are still more individually in the corporate environment using it for their own, you know, role, whatever that is. But now companies are actually starting to encourage in their hiring practices that they want people who are AI savvy.
Absolutely. It's going to become a competitive advantage rather than something that it's like a drag. Oh, I need to now monitor for it. If you're not positioned ahead, you're behind, right? So I think that's what companies are realizing. And that's why you're seeing it across the board, like in the hiring processes. They're even hiring teams to be on the cutting edge and make sure that they're aware of what's going on. So we see a lot of that happening, and that's just been over the past months, not even years.
That's right. So what does your active management style or process actually do differently in this part of the market?
So Pierre, as you know, my background is in hedge fund investing. So I spend 20 years researching and investing in long short equities. So when I launched Sphere, the idea was that I can bring the same rigorous investing to the everyday investors. And right now we only run a long strategy just because that's the way to compound returns. If you have a long-term horizon, you don't necessarily need to be hedged. So that was my original thinking. And the idea basically is that everybody can get access to this thorough research-based investing. And what does that mean, right? It's several things. So we run a very concentrated portfolio, which is pretty high risk, but it's very attractive as a complement to other strategies, right? So if you're trying to diversify away from the mega cap, a strategy like this could be helpful. Another thing that we do very differently than what you may, not only the concentration, what you may see out there is risk management. So we have a very differentiated way of managing risk, which is not cutting risk during downturns. I think that's what a lot of people do wrong, and then they miss the next leg up when the market turns. The key for us is to make sure that during downturns, every idea that we own is correct and the thesis is playing out, and it's just the market that is creating the volatility. So what we do during downturns is we increase the amount of ideas we generate. And that way, every idea that we have is fresh and has a thesis that will be playing out. So I would say, like, from a high level, everybody's like, oh, an AI fund, another AI fund. But if you like dive deeper, a lot of the funds, this is a very different, like, our strategy is very different than what you would see out there.
Is there an example that you could run through of a holding that you have that is kind of that sort of makes the point for the listeners to walk through one of your holdings or something that came in and out of the portfolio from the past, maybe that can help crystallize
absolutely.
That.
So we do this basically on a daily basis. So one great example is the software trade, right? We were very invested in software, specifically in cybersecurity. That's a really a big focus area for us. But during the pullback, what we've been doing is reevaluating software, right? And a lot the first companies that came out of the portfolio were the ones that we thought were getting hurt. Like we used to own HubSpot. They are a leader in a leading CRM system for small companies. We used the application. We weren't really seeing the AI agents that they're providing in the platform being particularly useful. So we started exiting those, but then furthered into exiting some of the cybersecurity ideas. And basically what replaced them would be semi-cap equipment, right? That cycle turned to the upside. Optical networking, that cycle also turned to the upside in the middle of last year. So this is what we do on a constant basis. Now our exposure to cyber is quite low. And as everything has gotten completely destroyed, we're going to go back and evaluate, well, who actually is going to beat earnings by a significant amount. And now you're buying it at a significantly lower price. So I expect that we would shift back into some of these names as we take profit on some of the semi-cap equipment and redeploy it into those areas. So that's really a little bit of how the universe kind of stays the same, but what you own in any given time can really determine your returns.
Right. And there's I mean, just going back over, you know, your points, you know, you've got all these different types of companies that are in different segments. It's not all one trade. Like your companies are exclusively volatile at different times, and so they might the diversification benefit is that they don't all move in one direction at the same time. They're all you're watching correlations. We take it, right? You're looking at the correlation between your holdings as well and how they offset each other. Like one day semi-cap is rallying and software is going down, but the net effect of all the different segments that you hold that diversify your portfolio across the different companies that you own is actually providing the smoothing.
That's right, Pierre. And I would add to that basically from fundamental basis, these companies are very different from one from each other, right?
And different drivers.
You really only exactly very yeah. different drivers, and you really only see that on a six month to a 1 year basis. Because sometimes what ends up happening is, and this is why investors wrongly assume that the AI trade is all one of the same, right? You see moments of broad deleveraging, like if there is macro noise, right? People sell what they own, and they all seem to correlate to one another, but their fundamentals are very different. So what ends up happening is once the dust settles, the companies with the good fundamentals or the ones that have the cycle in their favor will immediately bounce back to new highs, and the companies that are challenged are going to stay together. So I think are going to stay down, right? So I think that's the biggest mistake I think people make, that they think of this just because they trade together on any given day as an AI trade, but the fundamentals actually are quite divergent across the board.
From the position of time frames and patience, what are the biggest behavioral mistakes investors make when they try to invest in these in tech themes or even infrastructure driven themes in the tech space? What do you see as the behavioral boogeyman that undermines investors' approaches?
Well, I think the biggest mistake that people make is trying to chase returns, right? So I think you need to step back and have a long-term horizon if you want to be invested in this space. And basically, the reason why you need to have a long-term horizon is because once there is some noise and everything sells off, you don't want to be in position where you're joining that sell-off. So you want to be buying on the dips, and that's where the long-term horizon comes in place. Now, that's very different then waiting 10 years for a trade to play out. I think that's another mistake that people think. It's like, oh, I'm invested for the next 10 years. I don't care if a stock is down or not. That's not necessarily the case, because what you don't want is you show up in 10 years and that stock actually didn't work while the market has been delivering double-digit returns, right? So I think on the flip side, while you need this long-term horizon to be able to buy the dips, you also want to be disciplined and checking on your, whether it's individual ideas or your managers, to make sure that they do have a process, or if it's an idea that they are delivering on what you had expected them to be delivering on. So for us, it's very easy because we have very clear catalysts and expectations of what the companies should be delivering. So for us, it's very easy to cut the losers and add to new ideas. But I would say, like, investors should be doing this on an ongoing basis, because you do want to make sure that you are compounding returns. That's really the only way to generate decent returns over the long run.
Keep refreshing that list, as you say, for the new ideas and drawdown, and make sure you're in the best opportunities possible at all times.
Yeah, I think investors focus themselves on too few opportunities sometimes, and you know, it's the amount of the breadth of thinking isn't wide enough, and unwittingly they might be focused on one part of the market. So, but if you can build a portfolio, in your case of a concentrated portfolio across all these different opportunity sets, then all the different opportunity sets have all the different drivers that provide the actual diversification within the subset of industrial technology. So it is possible to actually build a diversified portfolio within that sleeve itself. Ivana, what would have to go wrong for your thesis to break in your mindset, in your way of thinking?
So I think back to what I was saying before, each individual idea has specific things that can go wrong, right? So in the case of hardware, I think that we could be pretty supply constrained to a point where companies cannot be meeting or beating their numbers. And therefore, on the positive side, the stocks wouldn't necessarily be collapsing, but you're not really going to be seeing outsized returns. So that's what we're like for a hardware trade. We're not so focused on downside, because NVIDIA is already trading at a pretty cheap multiple compared to historical basis. The question is more, is there enough capacity? Is there enough potential to put these chips in use? So that's really where we're seeing the risk from that perspective. For other areas, for example, like cybersecurity, I think the risk is going to be that these AI agents take longer to ramp, right? So if they're put in place in the next 1 to 3 years, it's going to be a big boom in terms of cybersecurity need, right? If companies take 3 to 5 years, all of a sudden you have a lull of several years of this being like securing the AI agents being like $100, $200, $300 million business, not in the billions, which is what you need for the trade to keep going. So I would say each area has its own risk. I think some of the model companies, we're not involved in, a lot of them are private. Their biggest risk is they're spending a lot of capital, right? And then are they going to be able to get the returns? So I think the return question is more on that part of the market, where like really big numbers are being spent, hundreds of billions of dollars. Will you actually deliver? And if you will everyone deliver? Or is it going to be one company that gets the major share of the pie? So I would say there are risks for each individual group. Like for space, for example, the big risk is basically we are launching rockets, but can we launch them at a fast enough cadence for the math to work and for costs to decline, right? Because if costs are declining, then the data center trade in data centers in space makes perfect sense. But if your costs today are 3,000, they're expected to go down to 300. And it's pretty like realistic that that's going to happen. If that doesn't happen, on the flip side, you're looking at a trade that's like 10 years out rather than 3 to 5 years. So each individual area that we invest in comes with its own risks. And that's really like a lot of the time that we spend is monitoring these risks and making sure that they're not actually materializing.
Ivana, thank you so much for that incredible, I mean, this incredible conversation. I think it comes in such a relevant time. And it's been so great to have you. Thank you so much for your insight.
Thanks for having me.
I think we should remind the viewers that Ivana manages the SPR ETF. I think that's SPRX. That's the ticker symbol, right? So,
yep, that's right.
Obviously, go to the website and check out that. And the performance has been exceptional. Congratulations on that. Well done. And wishing you many more successes as we go through this huge technological revolution.
Thank you. And for disclosures, all holdings are on our website, including the standardized performance and the prospectus. So people can go and check them out.
You know, I wanted to say one last parting word, which was that, you know, I realized just beforehand that, you know, here we are. I'm with you both, and you're both BNN market call regulars now.
Excellent.
BNN is great.
Agreed.
Well, Ivana, you're great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.